at Kresge.org.
And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater, Community Conscious Radio. Hi, I'm Mary Glennie. Oops, Arlene, sorry about that.
I'm Arlene Engelhart, and you are listening to From a Woman's Point of View. Well, Mary, you have an exciting program planned this morning. Certainly the topic of the day, and I'm excited to say that not only do you have the co-author of the report.
And a delightful person.
Yes, but we also are going to be talking to a University of Florida student who's part of Sunrise
Movement,
and the young people are fighting to save this planet, and it's exciting to see that movement.
Yeah, and I'm hoping you were just listening to Amy Goodman, George Monbiot. Yes, I have tremendous respect for that man's intelligence, and I was bemused, and he was talking about switching from meat, and what it really makes me think of, climate change, or I like the way he is saying climate breakdown, because I think that's really far, far truer analysis. It's almost like there's a war. It's almost like Pearl Harbor, and we kind of need the Rosie the Riveter attitudes, really, because the urgency really is dire. It really is. We don't have much time. But when I was listening to George and all the work we've done on climate change, there are so many ways. There isn't just one way to affect it. There are so many ways, and I think it's so important for all of us to really realize that each of us has to, in our own way, get in there and find some ways to really reduce our carbon footprint. And I think it really will transform you as a human being and our society. So this is actually, you might say, the crisis that we've needed, if you will. And so I really think not only can we do this, but I think, rather than just being in kind of a constrained grid that we have been actually all of my lifetime with fossil fuels and being on this huge electrical grid, and the tragic thing is that we've known for years that we've lost 70 to 80% of the energy that actually we create in all of our power plants in a transferal. And if we had really focused on conserving and cutting that waste down, we could have reduced so much our input, but we didn't do the easy things. We didn't pay much attention to it. So now we have more challenges. But anyway, I'm pretty excited.
Many years ago when I was in, at that time they called it junior high, I had a teacher who told us that if each one of us would find just one thing that we could do that would help save the planet, and that long ago, she was talking about saving the planet. I had an earth science class at that time. And so many of us talked about things like turning off the faucet while you were brushing your teeth.
That's all important.
Or saving, we weren't into much recycling then, but it was an important issue.
Yeah, and Arlene is right. I'm really excited because our first guest will be actually the co-author of the National Science Assessment, which I know on Black Friday all of you were really hunkering down and reading all 600 pages of the report. But no, you don't have to read the whole thing. Just look at the summary, the overview, or just look at the news we've had in the last couple months just here in this area. First Florence up in North Carolina, and then Michael, and then those fires. And without having to get the data, that something's gone seriously wrong with the climate. But first, before we get into that, I want to play this little promo because this is all important.
Hi, this is Desiree Lynn with a WMNF community announcement. Tampa Food Not Bombs is a solidarity-based resource for the houseless community, sharing meals twice weekly in Lakes Gaslight Park downtown. Every meal we serve is a demonstration against America's massive food waste and lacking social services, while critical resources are diverted to militarism and war. We serve only vegan and vegetarian meals, and our shares take place Tuesday mornings at 8 a.m. and Saturdays at 4 p.m. You can check us out online at Facebook at Tampa Food Not Bombs.
And without further ado, let's get into Brenda Eckwurzel, Dr. Brenda Eckwurzel.
Perfect.
Well, I am so happy to welcome to the show Dr. Brenda Eckwurzel, and she is a climate senior science climatist and director of climate science for the Union of Concerned Scientists. She is the co-author of the very recent report, the Fourth National Climate Assessment. She has studied climate variability in places as disparate as the Arctic and the North Pole and in the Southwest, and she is a hydrologist, PhD in hydrology. And she particularly has been studying the influence of major carbon producers on rising global air temperatures and sea level. She actually authored a book that was put out, and I thought was a really, really wonderful practical guide. She was a co-author, Cooler Smarter, Practical Steps for a Low Carbon Living. And so, Dr. Eckwurzel, welcome so much to the show.
Thank you so much. It's good to be with you today.
Well, you know, I can imagine you, the hydrologist, and I looked through some of your technical reports, and I think I stopped at the one that was talking about paleohydrology. I thought, I think I'll
yes.
but I can just imagine, because I've gone to your Facebook page, and I love some of the pictures, and you obviously really love nature. You love to be out in nature, and I can just imagine when there you're excited, you're on this plane and you're flying over, you know, up near the Arctic area, and you look down, you expect to see ice caps and ice, and you're seeing water. And so you thought, what the heck is happening? And indeed, I think we're asking the same questions. What the heck is happening?
That's true. Well, the Fourth National Climate Assessment, as you mentioned, it really makes clear that climate change is not some problem in the distant future or just affecting polar bears. It's really happening right now in every part of the country. And so, yeah, that's pretty much the bottom line, what you were mentioning. That's when I woke up, was I was at the North Pole and there was open water in September. And I was kind of shocked to see that.
And Dr. Eckwurzel, you know that I think most average people are aware that there is definite climate change. There are definite things happening. And really, just here in Florida, if you will, just say give the last 6 weeks, we're hurricanes down here, but we're really noticing the erosion, the increase in sea levels. Down in Miami, they have just normal high tide street flooding. But really, just in the last few weeks down here, I think Hurricane Florence, which could have hit us, but luckily for us, but not lucky for people in North Carolina and some parts of South Carolina, and we watched that huge storm with all that rain flood practically the state and all the problems within. But I think even more so, a real wake-up call for a lot of us came with Hurricane Michael. This thing kind of came out of nowhere. We're in October. We think, oh, the worst is over. And in 3 days, it builds into one of the most furious hurricanes. And actually now data has shown that when it actually hit in the panhandle, that it was a Category 5. And it continued as a hurricane into Georgia. And the devastation from that was like being in a war zone. And I think, and then you throw right on top of that the fires in California. And I think an awful lot of people here in Florida, and I'm sure in California, we are really not just shocked, but I think it's really almost alarming. And somehow to have President Trump saying he doesn't believe it, or if you look at the activities, frankly, of an awful lot in Congress in the last year, they act like they don't believe it. To me, people are getting it because they're living with it. But when you have this kind of attitude from the government, from the top people, I think it's deplorable.
You make a really good point. First off, one of your earlier points was that the hurricane came, and most people, when they hear a category of the immense strength of a hurricane, are thinking about the wind damage coming in. And we don't do as good a job at warning people about what often leads to the most deaths, which are drowning. Because the intense precipitation can move inshore and be washing away cars. I remember in that one case, there was some family that was told to evacuate from the coast, mm-hmm. and they evacuated to a place they felt safe, and then the car was washed away because of the intense precipitation-induced flooding. And And so that's something that we have to do better at communicating during these extreme events where it is safe to evacuate to and what types of changing conditions of the storm might be a new type of risk, even though you might have escaped that strong winds, for example. And it's affecting, like you say, a broad swath of Florida, the southeast, Georgia, the Carolinas. And what we're seeing is very strong storms coming with renewed frequency. So scientists are studying these storms and these hurricanes and finding that, in fact, they are carrying, you know, at least 10 to 15% more precipitation than if we had not had human-influenced climate change. And when it's at the biblical scale of precipitation, such as what fell on Houston, a 15% extra of a gargantuan amount of water, it turns out to be just way too much, and you're flooding people's homes, infrastructure, and everything. And the damages can be, I think Hurricane Harvey was estimated to be around $125 billion in damages. And Hurricane Michael, the inland flooding, and, you know, people are still reacting and still recovering from some of these precipitation events, not just at the shore, but as you mentioned, inland as well.
And, you know, Dr. Eckworth, it was really kind of interesting because we've had a very hot summer, a long summer. And as I've noticed in your report, that the summer seasons, the growing seasons for a lot of farmers are longer now. You know, the frost is mm-hmm. later and the heat starts sooner. And we were kind of complaining because here it was October and we were still in the 90s. But then we find out with Michael, because we did have that high pressure front that was giving us all this hot weather, that actually that kept Michael from hitting. Well, I mean, you know, they're somewhat unpredictable, but that precluded that Michael was going to hit in our area, which is a very populous area, and Pinellas, which is right across the bridges, you know, from Hillsborough County, where I'm talking to you now. We already know that it would take a week to evacuate the people from Pinellas County. And that hurricane started and hit in 3 days. And so it is that kind of problems that you think, whoa, you know, that we cannot keep depending on luck because you're talking millions of people if it would have gone in that area. And I think that's what has all of us alarmed, to have this kind of denial, because we know the first report that came out, President Obama acted on that and wasn't allowed the data that he used from that led to the Paris Accords. And even though that we didn't think it was ambitious enough, nevertheless, those reports from the first climate assessment led a great deal to the Paris Accords. But now the second one, which is mandatory, when you have a president that's saying, I don't believe it, you know, and the next report that comes out, oh, it won't be based on extreme events, you know, like this one was, it'll be much better. And extreme events now are the norm. They're not the exception.
That is unfortunately, one of the signatures of human-influenced climate change are these extreme events. And while the federal research to predict where the hurricane track is going has improved, so many more days out, we have earlier warning for first responders, and we're getting more and more precise, so we're evacuating a smaller portion of the coast. That's a good improvement. And you're lucky, in that storm, it was so close, and then it shifted slightly, and it did avoid a more populous area. We were all breathing a sigh of relief when that happened, and we were so grateful. And it just shows you, okay, what if it didn't? You know, and are we prepared? Is our infrastructure ready for that type of extreme event? Unfortunately, with climate change, we know that, for example, Hurricane Harvey was studied, and at the time that it hit, it was three times more likely to be that severe storm compared to if we had no human-influenced climate change. So unfortunately, it's more likely that these type of hurricanes are going to hit parts of the southeast, and therefore we have to make sure our communities are safer, and we're prepared for these type of storms.
And again, you're listening to WMNF, and this is, you're listening to Dr. Brenda Eckworsel, and we're talking about the National Climate Assessment. And, you know, another thing, again, we're talking actually to Dr. Brenda Eckwurzel, and she is one of the co-authors of the report that all of you have been reading ever since, actually, the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday. And Dr. Eckwurzel, this is going back to Hurricane Sandy, and I remember watching it. And I think one of the really revealing and troubling things to me that I found out then, that I was pretty frustrated with, you know, all the curves they give of the probabilities, et cetera. And I learned a long time ago that the curve I paid the most attention to was the European model. And when I found out that actually we did not have the kind of satellite telemetry that Europe uses, and then we've had the cutbacks in NOAA, you know, which is so essential. And I was dumbfounded that the data we were depending on then for Sandy was a little satellite, actually a Canadian satellite, that was already going beyond its extended life, that it should have been falling back into the atmosphere by now. And it is that kind of situation, too, that, you know, here we are the wealthiest nation in the world, which, frankly, some of the best science. And to me, it's deplorable that even still, I really pay attention to the European tracking models more than I do ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the European tracking models took that. They were the first to predict that that left curve, operational model of their left curve, would hit into the New Jersey, New York area with Hurricane Sandy. The other models started catching up, but they had a much earlier warning of that outcome. And so what we see is that we do need to, luckily Congress, there have been proposed cuts to satellites and things like that. And luckily Congress has made sure that that funding was safe for NOAA and things like that, because we've learned from Hurricane Sandy. We cannot pull back on satellites that help us with weather prediction. And so luckily, we and members of Congress really need to hear from people say, this is really important for Florida, for the Carolinas, for us to know what's happening with these hurricanes. And the other thing is that we benefit from not only the U.S. benefiting from our own knowledge, but sharing that with our scientists around the world who also need to have that knowledge, just like we benefited from the Canadian satellite, we benefited from the European model in the Hurricane Sandy case, because we share information across borders, because really the climate is borderless. and the UK, they want to have very good models, because lots of these hurricanes hit the United States, or if they don't come in, they'll spin off into the North Atlantic, and they often are bringing the weather and intense precipitation up towards Europe and the UK. And so luckily they pay attention too. So we all benefit from that. But we should be at the forefront. We're the ones that are on the brunt of where these North Atlantic hurricanes make landfall.
Yeah, and so much has been learned and known about climate change, really. I read your report. I think it's absolutely excellent. And, you know, I remember one section that said we've known it for over 200 years. And, you know, that if they go to your website and many others, but particularly your website, the Union of Concerned Scientists, I've commonly gone to your website because I know the science is so good, and it's readily understandable by the layperson. You don't have to be a scientist to understand this, but you know, it's not at all surprising. I think most people are quite aware that really the real problem we have is fossil fuels, and particularly now with transportation. And I think it's kind of heartbreaking when I went through your report in that section, and actually many utilities and people like that have tried to up their game and have done a little better, etc. But we're talking transportation. And so when we're really getting into this, we're really comparing the climate change, and with all the variabilities and not just, you know, the money, but the deaths from it, to the bottom line of money and a reluctance to transfer into more sustainable energy sources, which people are doing on their own, because that's kind of what it's boiling down to.
You're right. And what we see is that another feature we highlighted in the chapter Reducing Risks Through Mitigation is all the activities that are happening in over 455 cities, and every state, including Alaska and Hawaii, are having state-level mitigation-related activities that draw upon many different strategies to try to reduce emissions from the states. And so we have, you know, energy efficiency, renewables, carbon capture and storage, caps on carbon, Transportation is one of the bigger sectors that states are working on, as you mentioned, as well as forestry and land use, and trying to make sure that those are sucking up carbon for us and offsetting while we're still using carbon-intensive sources of energy. The good news is that if we get electrification of our transportation center sector and we roll out lots of energy that are non-carbon polluting, that we can instead slow the pace of sea level rise, instead avoid a lot of the damages that are under the high scenario of emissions that we highlight in the report. For example, by the end of the year, we project that if we did do the high emissions, we could have in some sectors over $100 billion each year by the end of the century, which surpasses the gross domestic product of many U.S. states. However, we could avoid those costs if we did the low emissions scenario. For example, we could cut nearly by half the costs in the labor sector. We could cut by nearly 60% the costs associated with extreme heat mortality. And at this point, I have to say, we have to stop talking dollars, really, because when we're talking extreme heat mortality, we're talking about the low emission scenario is really about saving people's lives.
Yeah, we're still watching with horror the California fires. And I think the fire is like 95% contained now. But the last figure I looked at, there's still almost 500 people that are still missing. And that is horrifying. And also, you're looking, you know, with the heat and the extended heat and the need for air conditioning. And so many of the old infrastructures, particularly with older or the infirm or the very young, they're very vulnerable to having, you know, heat challenges, et cetera. And everything about this that really, yes, it's not just the money. To me, it's people's lives. And also, I think it's really fascinating, and you, as a hydrologist, must find all this really horrifying, but still fascinating to see the interplay of all these factors. And you realize just how complicated and how interwoven all these different areas are, and they don't actually all change at the same moment. And so, you know, for us to deal with the future, we can't depend on the past. And I'm really kind of worried about what they call the feedback loops and the trigger points, you know, that we really don't know how to evaluate. And in fact, I think I was reading, and it wasn't, I don't think in your report, it was a different report, because I've been reading about this for quite a while. And that, you know, people that they estimate now are responsible for 90 to 123%. And I thought, whoa, how can they be responsible for 123%? And then I realized that there have been some mitigating effects like volcanoes, you know, which will put the ash in the air and preclude the sunlight. So, you know, that's somewhat of a mitigator of the heat trapment. And so I was really stunned to really kind of, that's the way I got exposed to these feedback loops. And in other words, science is great, but even science doesn't know when some of these things are going to go together. And to me, we're almost at a point that's kind of gone below the tipping point. And so some of it almost is already in a very unpredictable status. And to me, we still have just a little bit of time. And it's imperative to me that people not just learn, but do what they can.
Yeah, it's time to roll up our sleeves and get serious about rolling out many solutions that not only slow the pace of sea level rise, shave off the temperatures of these dangerous heat waves, and seriously roll them out within the next 10 to a dozen years. Our investments in the energy system of our future, the transportation systems of our future, so that by middle of this century, the U.S. and hopefully the world is what we call carbon neutral, so that we're no longer adding carbon to the atmosphere, and we can hold and rein in the temperatures so that it's in line with the Paris Climate Agreement. That type of world we could manage and adapt to at much lower cost. It's a good financial investment to help reduce global emissions in our country, as well as help other countries around the world with our innovative solutions that hopefully cost less. That's where the Holy Grail is, to get cheaper energy that's not harming our climate.
And again, you're listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater Community Conscious Radio, and you're listening to From a Woman's Point of View, Dr. Brenda Eckwurzel. And indeed, very powerful words. And at least the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Project for Climate Change, said we have about 12 years. And again, we're talking to Dr. Brenda Eckwurzel, and she is the co-author of the National Climate Assessment, Volume 4, which has just come out. And tell me, Dr. Eckwurzel, I'm going to put you on the spot here, because I think people maybe don't know all the details scientifically, but they are aware something serious is happening. And they're kind of, you know, you see all over where people are trying to go solar and they're doing their wind, you know, in local areas, et cetera. I'm very impressed with coal company country. A lot of these people say, we don't want coal coming back. We've seen what you've done to our mountains. We've seen what you've done to our streams. We're going to go solar ourselves. And, you know, you see these kind of breakouts where people are. But tell me, because we don't have a lot of time, and because the fossil fuel industry is so powerful, and the money involved is so extensive, that do you think that people will be able to demand this change? I mean, are you worried that we only have about 12, 15 years to really get our serious act together? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, actually, I think if we cover more about the momentum that is building and the success stories and how it's changing our lives when we are, for example, we're using some sort of electric transportation option, a public transportation that's totally powered by renewable energy, or if our vehicles are electric and powered by renewable energy. We don't have that guilt that we're causing the problem, and that feels good. And also, it creates many more jobs. So right now, the renewable energy sector in the United States is one of the fastest growing job creations in the United States compared to other sectors. And so these are good news stories, and sometimes when we share these stories with ourselves, with our neighbors, and we find out we have more money in our pocket to be able to invest in our children's education or some community project we're passionate about, that is something that we have to start telling more about those stories. There is an amazing number of students that are coming out with great ideas about how to solve this problem. They know it's part of their future, too, as they learn about climate change and the risks. And also, when we have more clean energy, it helps with public health costs. Cardiorespiratory disease, some of these asthma, ground-level ozone, and a lot of other triggers go away for a lot of the health emergency room visits. And so it's just a win-win-win to roll out solutions for climate change, because they create jobs. And the investment pays off in the long run, because we won't be paying billions of dollars every year just reacting to disasters and, unfortunately, you know, not saving as many lives as we would like to, because these costs don't have to be as big if we reduce global emissions and we adapt to the climate change that, unfortunately, we've already dialed in.
You know that after I get done talking to you, I'm going to be talking to actually a University of Florida student, and she's part of the Sunrise Movement. And, you know, they've been up protesting, you know, members of Congress, because with the new Congress, they're really putting pressure, you know, for new clean energy, the new Green Deal. And I think it's so good, their model, that just as they believe the sun is going to rise tomorrow, that they believe that we are going to change this. And I think that kind of attitude, you know, is going to prevail. And so I am really excited. And I think it was in your book that, I don't know if it was a colleague of yours or just someone you knew about, this professor had a laser printer, and he realized that it had no, a sleeper, so to speak, mechanism. We cut down the use of energy. So he just shut it off each night, and he saved $130 a year.
Yes. And so that's Shulman. Yep, one of our co-authors. co-authors, his printer. I thought I was doing everything, and after reading Cooler, Smarter, Practical Steps to Low Carbon Living, I changed some of the stuff I thought was, you know, I thought I was doing the most I could, and I realized even I could dig even deeper because I didn't realize some of the concepts in that book, which often are that if you have a chance, really take advantage of these engineered new standards that we have for energy efficiency. Don't hang on to your really old stuff, because just using it day in, day out can cause more carbon emissions than getting a better engineered, lower energy efficient, more energy efficient model.
And we were talking about the Sunrise Movement. And so actually, I'm going to just quickly do this station biz. And then I want to get on to that interview, because I thought it was so much fun with the University of Florida student. But let's put this on first.
On Saturday, January 5th, WMNF and WMNF After Dark present West in the Dark, our third annual Dark Wave Showcase, featuring Oots Oots, Sleeping Pills, and South Florida's A Starry Night. Plus, DJs Mouse and Mark Paradise from Communion After Dark. The action takes place Saturday, January 5th at the Crowbar in Ybor City. Doors are at 8. Tickets are $12 in advance, $15 at the door. Go to WMNF.org for more information.
And again, you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater. It's Community Conscious Radio. And as Dr. Eckwurzel and I just mentioned about the Sunrise Movement, I was really excited to catch up with Marcella J. Mulholland yesterday, because let's face it, the ones who are going to be most affected are the young and those not yet born. And so their lives are really at stake. And I think they've realized there's no one else they can depend on. The politicians have failed. And a lot of us have kind of dithered in place. And so they've just decided they're going to take matters in their own hands. So let's meet Marcella Mulholland.
Okay.
Well, I am so happy to welcome to the show Marcella J. Mulholland. And she is a University of Florida student. And she's part of that movement that I want to learn a lot more about, the Sunrise Movement. So, Marcella, welcome so much to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Mary. I'm super happy to be here.
Well, you know, after the Climate National Assessment just came out, I think was actually published on Black Friday, I think with the hopes that most people wouldn't even notice it. I think that if we weren't already aware that climate change is a very serious problem in every way, including tremendous economic liabilities, I think people are becoming very aware of that now, don't you think?
Yes, I certainly think so. This report comes a month after the UN also published their IPCC report, which also sounded the alarm once again about the urgency of addressing climate change and set a time frame of 12 years for us to rapidly decarbonize and transform our economy. So this new national assessment on climate change just adds to the sense of urgency that we in Sunrise already have, because we know this issue is going to affect our economy and the places that we love really soon. So,
yeah, and just living here in Florida, you know, we had Florence. It didn't actually hit us, but hit North Carolina area, and we followed with horror all the flooding, all the damage it did.
Yeah.
And then we got Michael, the three-day wonder, which actually hit, data shows, as a Category 5. And then right on top of that, we're having the fires in California, and we still think there are almost 500 people that are missing. And so we don't actually need a report to alert us that things are going seriously wrong here in this climate. But I think it's great because the Sunrise Movement, now tell us about this, because you're a youth movement, and if anybody is so aware of the impacts and the necessity to do something, not tomorrow, but now, I think it really is the youth in this country and the world.
Yeah, totally agree. So Sunrise is a youth-led movement to stop climate change and create millions of good jobs in the process.
And we were created by young people who are really frustrated by the lack of leadership that our politicians have shown on addressing climate change. And the main two things that we're pushing for right now are for politicians to sign a no fossil fuel money pledge, which essentially says that they will reject any campaign contributions from fossil fuel executives and CEOs and instead prioritize the health and well-being of our people and planet. And then secondly, something really exciting that we're pushing for right now is a Green New Deal. So Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a newly elected congresswoman from New York, recently proposed a resolution for a select committee in the House on a Green New Deal. And we did a sit-in in Nancy Pelosi's office two weeks ago, pushing her to get on board with a Green New Deal. And this is really exciting and kind of emotional because it's the first time that a U.S. representative has officially proposed legislation that actually, not legislation, but proposed a framework for what could actually become legislation that meets the scale of this crisis. And it's really, this is like a pivotal moment in the climate movement, and we are building so much momentum across the country with people who are enthusiastic about a Green New Deal and are ready to push their representatives to get on board too.
Well, you know, I think it's really exciting, that been Marcella, because I'm thinking also of the Indivisible Movement, which is so dovetailed with what you people do, you know, that they particularly focus on each individual's local representative. And they went to their offices and they tried to talk to them about the issues, et cetera. And, you know, the young people, we saw them in Parkland after the horrible murder down there in the students. But with climate change, you know, you're not going to deny the evidence that's been there. I mean, heavens knows we've known about climate change actually factors for 200 years, and we are aware, and we're aware of the data right now. We're aware that the seas have risen, you know, 9 inches in all of this, and also if you're down from South Florida, that you're aware that in Miami, just with high tide, they're having, you know, some local street flooding.
And we're
watching this, and yet we realize that the politicians in Washington and their President Trump, you know, responds that he just doesn't believe this report, that it was, they used the most extreme events.
Right.
And I think most of us are aware that actually most of our weather events anymore are pretty extreme. And we're hitting regularly the 500-year flood or whatever. And so the change has to come, so to speak, from the people, from the bottom up, that if the politicians aren't going to lead, we're going to tell them what they need to do, right?
Heck yes, we are. That's the plan. It's kind of ridiculous and surreal because as we have politicians like denying that climate change is happening, we have people already dealing with the impacts of climate change. It's not like a far-off problem. It's a problem that's here right now. I was just home for Thanksgiving in Florida, and my brother lives in the San Francisco area of California, and he had to come home early for Thanksgiving break because the air pollution was so bad from the wildfires in California. And it really just like drove home the urgency of dealing with this issue, because these wildfires are only going to worsen and become more frequent if we don't address climate change. And what's particularly frustrating is that we have the technology to address this issue, and we have the public on our side. Poll after poll shows that the majority of Americans and the overwhelming majority of millennials are on board with a transition to a clean energy economy. But what's lacking is the political will. And Sunrise has identified that the main corrupting factor in preventing us from having political leaders having the will to address this issue is fossil fuel money, because politicians from both parties have really become bought out by fossil fuel executives and CEOs. So we're really focusing on getting that money out of politics in order to have political leaders that actually represent the interests of the public more effectively.
And Marcella, I'm really interested because I know that you had to sit in Pelosi's office, and how much you're supporting, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her new Green Deal. But also, I'm impressed that, as I understand it, your organization also is working at the local level. In other words, the young people that join, each one of us have different areas, different environmental facts where we actually live. And as I understand it, it's not just at the national level, but it's also at the local level. Is that true?
Yeah, it is true. So we had our sit-in at Nancy Pelosi's office in D.C. with over 200 people there, and we told her what we're fighting for and what is at stake for us in the climate crisis. And then the week after that, we organized a national Green New Deal Day of Action, and there were over 150 visits to congressional offices across the country. So this is people who saw our action in Pelosi's office and were inspired by it and decided to take action in their own communities with their own local elected officials. And since then, that has led to 15 congresspeople who have signed on to support Ocasio-Cortez's resolution for a select committee on a Green New Deal. So it was really exciting to see, for one, the people power that we were able to bring into D.C., and then also to see that power then translate to an action that was distributed across the country a week later.
And, you know, Marcella, and again, we're talking to Marcella J. Mulholland, and she's part of the Sunrise Movement. You know that very shortly I'm going to be talking to a group, and that actually they're in coal country, Appalachia. We know that President Trump so much, you know, said there's been a war on coal, and he's going to bring coal back, you know, doing, you know, all this stuff. And it's really interesting that people that actually live in those coal fields said, no, we don't want coal back. We see what it's done to our environment. We've lost our mountains. You know, we've got mountaintop removal. We've got all that stuff that's been dumped in our streams, et cetera. And our kids don't even know what mountains look like. To them, they are just great places where they can use their, you know, off-trail bikes and all that for racing. And so they are doing solar projects, and they're doing their own restoration, et cetera. Yes, it's on a very small local scale, but they realize already that actually that the kind of energy they're doing with solar can actually be distributed beyond their thing. And to me, it's that kind of grassroots that, as I say, every area has its own particular problems and situations. And to me, it's that kind of, no, we don't want what you want to give us. And isn't that part of what you're aspiring to do too, also?
It totally is. Something Sunrise has identified as a failure of the climate movement over the past decade is that we've kind of allowed this false choice to be given to us by politicians of it's either jobs or the environment or economy or a livable planet. And my generation and Sunrise Movement is really like calling BS on that false choice, because as this national assessment that you mentioned earlier shows, is that our economy is going to be fundamentally impacted by climate change. And actually investing in clean energy and investing in a Green New Deal and a transition to renewables will create millions of good-paying jobs across the country. And this is dignified work with a living wage and the dignity of knowing that you are helping humanity address no less than like the greatest existential challenge we've ever faced. So that's why Sunrise, our mission statement is stop climate change and create millions of good paying jobs in the process. And that comes from our understanding that it's not jobs versus environment. And also our understanding that in this moment in our country, we're facing not just a climate crisis, but a crisis of economic inequality and a crisis of stagnant wages. And we see climate change as really a unique opportunity to address, or a Green New Deal offers us the opportunity to address climate change and address these other economic issues that we see in the country.
You make such an important point. You really do, because so often it is put in those terms. Well, you know, it's either jobs, and this is the jobs we know, or, you know, environmental measures. And actually, the possibilities for economic improvement and investment, and not just right now, but continued in the future, is totally in green, sustainable energy. And so that is so important. But it's also so important that so many of the really big money interests have tried to pit people against each other. And so often, they have put these power plants, et cetera, in very disadvantaged communities, et cetera. And people, the suffering from climate change hasn't been borne equally. And I think that this is just great that you're saying, it's not a matter of either or. It's a matter that you've tried to lock us into a system that is dead and dying and will take all of us with it if we don't break out of this. And to me, that's what it is. It's not only a matter of assessing the climate, but it's kind of also, particularly you young people, assessing the human spirit.
Totally, Mary. I couldn't agree more. And something really exciting about the resolution that Ocasio-Cortez proposed on a Green New Deal is that it really has equity at the center of this proposal, because we know that in order for any Green New Deal or any policy that addresses climate change to truly be just, it has to center frontline communities and communities that are the most impacted by environmental injustice, and those are overwhelmingly poor communities or communities of color. And so we need to make sure that those people are centered in any climate solution that we get behind.
And aren't you kind of glad, Marcella, that actually with the solar, wind, whatever the type of sustainable energy you're going to use, because not every solution is best for each area, that we're kind of going to get off this whole huge grid, which kind of made just pieces to be interspersed rather than individuals, you know, to really figure out what they need and how they can hook in, you know, to help their neighbors, etc. But we're kind of getting off that one sense of one grid, one side. Eyes will fit all.
Yeah, we're looking to build an energy system that is resilient to economic crises and climate crises, and we think that a Green New Deal is the best way to do this. And we know that we need to rapidly transition our society off of fossil fuels and into a renewables-based economy that will create good jobs for millions of Americans.
And tell me, Marcella, how did you get interested in this Sunrise Movement?
So it's a funny story, Mary. I actually was, I was a sophomore in college at University of Florida, and Trump was elected in the middle of my school week. Very rude of him to interrupt. And I went to class a few days after the election. I was feeling really distraught and devastated about what was happening nationally politically. And I actually went to class wearing a sign that said climate change is real. I know, it was very dramatic. So I walked into class, and the first class that I went to, I was very nervous, but I just like could not stand not speaking up about what I was feeling so heartbroken about. And the teacher for that class, as it turns out, this was just like a normal English, like gen ed class. And she, it turns out, was like the former director of Florida for the Food and Water Watch, which is another environmental protection organization. And she was like, oh my God. And then she saw my sign and we became friends after that. And then a few months later, she told me about Sunrise and connected me to someone there. And the rest is history.
I think it's, you know, ask and you will receive. I mean, really, it just seems that if you put it out there, the universe responds. And so how long has the Sunrise Movement been with us?
It launched 2 years ago, I want to say. I think it launched at the 2016 People's Climate March in D.C. And since then, we've had something called Sunrise Semester, which was a semester-long program where over 70 young people were placed in 5 different states across the country, what we thought were like politically critical states. And we went all in on the recent midterm elections, trying to elect political leaders that were actually going to center climate change as one of their main issues. And I was in Orlando, Florida, working on that.
And tell me, because there are a lot of older people that really are getting it too, and that I think it's great that it's a youth movement, because I think you are the ones that are going to be most impacted. It's your lives, but I also think you have the energy to say, "Hey, this is new, and we can do this, and it'll be fun." And so, but I'm sure you're welcoming older people who might not totally be considered youth to be part of this whole movement.
Yeah, we totally are. Last night there was a call, like a mass call about next steps for our Green New Deal campaign, and there were over 400 people in attendance, many of whom were calling themselves the elders. And it was kind of funny. But so we are a youth-led movement because we think it's really important to center the voices of people from my generation who are going to be the most impacted by climate change. But we obviously are thrilled to welcome people who are more seasoned activists who have been involved in the environmental movement and other movements for justice for longer than we have. And we are thrilled to have their support and to learn from them as well. And yeah, this is an intergenerational struggle, and like older people, solidarity with us means a lot to us. And there's space for everyone in the movement.
Well, I love your model, the sunrise. You know, that's so often in the past, and we're getting near the winter solstice. I mean, it's not going to be too long. And people were worried the sun wasn't going to rise in the sky again. But you people are and you know it's going to rise again. And Ben, just as sure as you know that you're going to change this world and make it more equitable and just.
Uh-oh.
And also save ourselves to be able to live in this planet. We need to keep it straight. The planet's not so much in danger as we are, and it's what we're doing.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Well, Marcella, you've been an absolute delight to talk to, and we've been talking to Marcella J. Mulholland, and we went through this pretty quickly. Was there anything you particularly wanted to cover that we didn't mention?
For one, if anyone is interested in getting more involved with Sunrise, you can go to sunrisemovement.org and get more information about actions that we're doing. There's an action coming up on December 10th where we're going to go back to D.C. and make our voices heard once again with Democrats in Congress. Lastly, if there's any young person out there listening who feels despair or grief about climate change, you're not alone. There are millions of people around the world and across this country that share your heartbreak over the path that we are on right now. And I would encourage you to take that grief that you feel and to get involved and to join young people like myself and millions of others who are working hard to build a more just world. And I know of no better antidote to despair than to get involved in meaningful work with dedicated people. And so if you're a young person who cares about climate change, or an elder, as we call them, who cares about climate change, please join us in this work. You can find more info at sunrisemovement.org, and I'd love to be involved in this effort alongside you.
Well, thank you so much. Very well spoken, and a real good reason to join with you and others to make sure the sun does sunrise. Okay,
yes.
Marcella Mulholland, thank you so much for giving us time, and all you're doing sounds great to me.
Delightful. I just really enjoy talking to her. And you know, when you talk to one like Marcella Mulholland, you realize the future's in very good hands. But elders can get involved, too. And so, anyway, I found her just a delight to talk to. I loved her energy.
She was terrific. Really just fun to listen to. And again, it's sunrisemovement.org.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go, and there's all kinds of information there, including how you can get involved with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd also like to mention a related event. Bernie Sanders is hosting a town hall on climate change on December 3rd. That will be in the evening. You can attend in person if you happen to be in D.C., or you can follow it live on Facebook. You can just do a search on Bernie Sanders Climate Change Town Hall, and it will come up.
And, you know, you don't want to get the spirit. There is a terrific book, and I hope I have time to work it into the schedule on the show, The Clean Energy Age, A Guide to Beating Climate Change, and it's by B.F. Nagy, and you've probably read some of his stuff where he commonly appears on media sources. But it's just so practical and so good, and you have to realize the technology is there, and there are just so many ways you can be involved, and so don't feel overwhelmed with it, that we have many many options, and I don't think I have time, but if you, like, you could pick this book up to any point, and like I'm opening it real quickly here, and it's airplanes, right? And so they're a huge source. Actually, they contribute 2 to 5% of all CO2. But it's really great. Alaska Airlines is stepping ahead, and they're consistently ranked first among U.S. domestic airlines for fuel efficiency, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they're using biofuel from cooking oil. And they aim to use biofuel in all their flights by 2020. And they plan to be the first commercial flight using an alcohol to jet fuel. And it's those kind of things that you think, whoa, you know, this is happening, and I didn't even know anything about it. And so get in there, people. It's really exciting, I think, a new age. I think it's about time we need it. So, Arlene, do you have anything else you want to say?
No, just a really important issue. We all need to get involved. And once again, I mention that point that my teacher made so many years ago. If we each did one or two things, it would make an enormous difference.
And you have been listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater, Community Conscious Radio. And this has been From a Woman's Point of View. Just keep it tuned here the whole time. And I think this music fits. Love this woman.
Here comes the sun.